Hello, everybody, and welcome back. This is Michelle Ricklin from the National Career Summit and selfgrowth.com. The focus of the National Career Summit, again, is to provide all of you with quality information to help you compete in today's job and career market. We have had some great interviews, practical and useful information, and today we are really fortunate to have a great guest with us who is speaking about an extremely important topic in the job and career market. Terry Hannon will be speaking on great jobs for everyone 50 plus. So let me tell you a little bit about Terry. Terry Hannon is a best-selling author and Washington, D.C.-based career, retirement, and personal finance expert. Terry's latest book is the national bestseller, Great Jobs for Everyone 50-plus, Finding Work That Keeps You Happy and Healthy and Pays the Bills, and that was published by John Wiley and Sons. Terry has spent more than 25 years covering all aspects of personal finance for the nation's leading media companies, including Forbes, Money, U.S. News and World Report, and USA Today. She is a nationally recognized authority on boomer career transitions and retirement. She is AARP's job expert and is the Great Jobs columnist for AARP.org. Terry is a contributing editor at Forbes magazine and the second verse columnist for Forbes.com and is recognized as the Forbes Bard of Career Transitions and Working Retirement Issues. She is the PBS website NextAvenue.org expert on career and personal finance for boomer women and writes a weekly column. She is a MetLife Foundation and New America Media Fellow on aging. She is the award-winning author of What's Next? Follow Your Passion and Find Your Dream Job. Terry is also the author of Getting Started in Estate Planning, Suddenly Single, Money Skills for Divorcees and Widows, 10-Minute Guide to Retirement for Women, and You and Your Money, A Passage from Debt to Prosperity, Trees in a Circle, The Teak Nose Post Story. Terry contributes regularly to the New York Times, USA Today, Money Magazine, The Wall Street Journal, and other national print and online publications. She has previously served as a staff reporter and personal finance columnist for USA Today and as a staff writer and editor for U.S. News and World Report, Money, Kiplinger's Personal Finance, and Forbes. She has appeared as a financial expert on NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams, ABC News, CBS, Fox, CNBC, CNN, and PBS, and has been a guest on numerous radio programs, including National Public Radio's Talk of the Nation and Making a Living on Sirius XM Radio Show. Hannon graduated from Shadyside Academy in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and received a Bachelor of Arts degree from Duke University. She is currently a member of an editorial board at Duke. Terry, welcome to the National Career Summit.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
So we have so much to talk about, and you have accomplished so much in this space, so it's really exciting to have you here.
Well, thank you so much. It's one of my favorite topics, careers for people over 50 and career transition. So I think we've got a lot of interesting things to share today.
Absolutely. So tell us, just a little bit about your latest book and why did you write it and who is it for?
Well, the book that's out now, Great Jobs for Everyone 50-plus, Finding Work That Keeps You Happy and Healthy and Pays the Bill, is really aimed at, you know, the boomer audience and maybe a little before and a little after. And it's taking a look at this whole idea that we are living longer, healthier lives, and there's lots of reasons why people want to keep working past what might be the traditional retirement age that was kind of this made-up age anyway, of 65. But it's also for people who maybe took an early retirement package but want to keep, you know, start over in a second career, or people who have retired and said, hey, you know, I want to keep working for a number of different reasons. And as I went around the country and I wrote this column, Great Jobs for AARP, I saw this tremendous hunger for information about finding work over 50 and sort of the challenges that went into that whole experience of looking for work. And it really just got me thinking, let's put a guide together of a smorgasbord of jobs that are possibilities for people to think about, of what they might want to do at this chapter of their life. And also, you know, Carrie's workshop on how do we go about, you know, interviewing for a job when we haven't done that in years, or putting together a resume when you haven't done one in years and years, and sort of getting hip to social media and all those other things that are critical in today's workplace, and kind of just rev up the juices to get started again in a whole new adventure.
And I would assume that there are many, many people out there that this is a frightening idea, because things are so, so different from what they were 20, 30 years ago.
That's so true. I mean, it's really daunting in so many ways. And I guess, you know, there's a couple of reasons why people – this book that I talk about in this particular book is that jobs that can be done on a seasonal basis, night jobs, part-time, full-time, or full-blown career. So I hit a lot of different ways people want to approach work in this section of – in this period in their life, I guess I should say. But what is interesting, I think, is that there are a couple of really important reasons why people want to keep – working and why they need to. So we'll get to the part about what skills you really need in order to make that happen for you. But I think some of the underlying reasons, which I mentioned right at the top of living longer, healthier lives, is, you know, there's this genuine fear of outliving our money. And we all have it on some level, even if we've saved and saved and saved for retirement, there's this incredible fear. So if you can keep working longer, you continue to contribute to those retirement accounts. You don't have to dip into them any sooner than you have to, and they can continue to compound and grow for you. If you're still eligible, you can, you know, continue to pay into Social Security, and you can, you know, stave off having to start taking your Social Security, which we know, you know, the longer you can delay up until the mandatory time to start taking it at from 62 to 70, you can get a bump up of 8% a year. So you're basically giving yourself a little bit of a raise there. So if you can hold off doing that, those are great financial reasons to keep working. But in addition to that, there are some really critical reasons you want to stay engaged in work in some fashion. And that comes down really to this sense of social engagement and of mental engagement. And I think we've seen studies even, you know, come out that show that working actually staves off, you know, the onset of Alzheimer's, perhaps. I mean, a French study came out recently sort of citing that. It just, when you're working and engaged, you stay mentally sharper. You're kind of more with it. And also the social engagement is a critical piece to aging gracefully and being part of, you know, wanting to get up in the morning, wanting to have something to do. And all of us, like, you know, volunteering, I'm a big fan of volunteering, and it often leads to paid work. But all of us like to get paid a little something for our efforts. So even if you're not going for that full-blown job, second career, third career, just staying involved in work is really super rewarding on so many levels. So that's why I like to get people kind of engaged with, okay, it's going to be a little harder over 50 to really get traction again, but I'm going to do it, and this is how I'm going to do it.
Now, earlier you said that there's this this number out there that's been out there for a long time, the number 65, that's the quote-unquote age for retirement, and that's when you should quote-unquote retire. Now, you were quoted on NPR as saying, we should retire the word retire. So elaborate on that. Tell us what you mean.
Well, it's so true, Michelle. I think the point is, you know, it should be you're refiring, not retiring. I mean, retiring, that word has these connotations of, you know, sitting around, sitting back, doing nothing, you know, when really this is a time in your life where you really have an opportunity to reengage, to refire. Hopefully some of the big obstacles are behind us in terms of, you know, paying off mortgages or putting kids through school. So this should be your time to do things that you really want to do that really gets you engaged. And so I like to think of it, and I'm not probably the first one to use that word, but refire instead of retire.
And when, well, another term that you use is bridge jobs.
Ah, yes.
So let's talk about that, because I don't know that everyone is familiar with that term.
Yeah, I think that's a super way to look at things, because, okay, when we were talking about the idea of continuing to work after that age of 65, a lot of people, you know, in today's world, we're not just, okay, boom, I'm done with this 30-year period of work that I've done, or more. You kind of edge your way into retirement these days. It's kind of a bridge job, meaning kind of you phase into retirement. You might even with your current employer scale back your hours so you have more flexible time. You might shift. In fact, a lot of employers are looking for ways to keep their experienced workers on the job by finding ways that they can downshift gradually into a retirement. And I think that some of the jobs that we can point to are jobs that are consulting jobs, or jobs that I have a whole chapter on jobs to ride the age wave, which we can chat about too. But these ideas that you might kind of not start over in a full-blown second career, absolutely not. You might redeploy those talents that you have used and those skills in your first career to do other kinds of work as you edge into retirement, that you're not saying, oh, I want to make this a second career. It's work, and it's job, and it's hope, and by all, I want people to love what they're going to do at this period of their life. So take your time, but frankly, it's a bridge to retirement. It's a phased-in, gradual way to step out of the workforce.
And it's interesting, because I think that there definitely is this perception of, well, I put in my time, and at the end of the day, I pack up my office, I get my watch, and I'm done.
Yeah, but you know what? I think a lot of people, cool, go and do that for a year or two. But then you're going to sit around going, well, what the heck do I do now? I mean, there was an interview I heard recently with the former chairman of the Federal Reserve, Alan Greenspan, who said, you know, he's 87 and he just wrote a book, and he's saying, retirement, what's that? When am I going to retire? When am I going to quit thinking? You know, the point is, we all want to stay engaged. So you might kick back for a little while, do some traveling, hang out with the grandkids, whatever it may be. But my guess is most people are going to say, hey, I want to stay relevant. I want to bring meaning to this point in my life. And that's kind of a whole other area we can chat about. It's just, you know, looking for work that really we feel makes a difference in our lives and in other people's lives, because that's really important, especially to the boomer cohort. I think it's a really important thing to do, and now is the time we might be able to do that.
So let's just back up a little bit and talk a little more personally. Obviously, you were driven to work within this space, and tell us how that came about, and just how your career kind of evolved into working with the, you know, the 50 plus population.
Well, I fit into it, and so it's kind of my cohort and my group of people. I'm 50. I'm in my early 50s, and it's something that I have witnessed all around me, from friends, colleagues facing this period where they were downsized from a job, and, you know, trying to get back in was really hard. I mean, super qualified people would be, you know, 2 years looking for work, and they get right down to those last two interviews, and they'd get passed over for the job, and it was almost as if they could see the person on the other side of the hiring table seeing their expiration date. And it's just so, the frustration was palpable. And so I would hear these stories, and I thought, oh, my goodness, you know, there's this, we've got to find a way to change this dynamic and get people back to work doing stuff that they really want to do. And I think the recession that hit, you know, back in 08 really, you know, triggered a lot of this and got my attention. But the whole idea, Michelle, of me talking about careers and really digging into this space and getting out and meeting people and counseling people was, I did a book, What's Next, Follow Your Passion and Find Your Dream Jobs. I spent about 3 years for U.S. News & World Report traveling around the country off and on, meeting people who had done something for 20-odd years and completely changed direction. For example, you know, a Navy pilot who retired from the Navy and ran away with the circus, you know? And it was wonderful, wonderful, inspirational stories of really finding your passion in life and saying, hey, I'm going for it right now. And a lot of it was triggered by a personal crisis in someone's life, maybe a health scare, cancer, they lost someone they loved. And back at that time, 9/11 actually triggered a lot of people to say, whoa, you know, whoa, whoa, whoa. Life is pretty precarious at times. Am I doing what I really want to do with this life? So I had such fun writing this book and meeting all these people that I got so passionate about the whole notion of what does work mean and how can we make it work for us. And so and I just found it really an intriguing topic. And to talk about my circus fellow, which is so such a wonderful story, because Don Covington, you know, he loved the circus from the time he was a little kid growing up in Baltimore. And he used to, you know, go to the circus everywhere he was stationed for the Navy during his career there. And he was a pilot. And so actually when he retired, Don could have potentially worked for, you know, a defense contractor, even flown commercial jets. But, you know, he said, Carrie, you know, he just loved the circus and he really wanted to do that. And he said in the end, he said, the Navy in the circus and the military in the circus aren't that different. And what I understood from what he was saying was that he was able to redeploy. He didn't reinvent necessarily. It sounds like a huge career jump. But what he did was redeploy his skills that he had learned through a career in the Navy as a leader. And he took a job as the company manager for the Big Apple Circus, which was moving a troop of 150 up and down the East Coast, and maybe a little less than that at times. But it was really all those strategic management, leadership, organizational skills he'd always used in his career that he was able to use just in a different playing field. And I just think that's how people need to think about their work and their careers. It's not like so scary, like, oh my gosh, I have to reinvent myself now. You don't have to. I mean, that's a lovely way of thinking about a new beginning. But really, if you think about it, you're just redeploying some of those fabulous skills you have and giving them a shiny new coat.
Right, and I think that tends to be one of the most overwhelming challenges for people that are in career transition is how am I going to translate what I've done so that it makes sense to somebody in something else?
That's true.
You know, I get that from a lot of my clients, and that's part of what we work on is that you need to dig and you need to find out, well, what are the skills that are transferable? And people get stuck in this little box and don't quite get that, you know, they've got so much that they've learned that just applies to something completely different.
So you were just spot on there, because, Michelle, what you just said is so true. People have this sort of tunnel vision of they want to replicate, particularly if they've been downsized from a job or taken an early retirement and want to get back in. They have these blinders that we need to replicate what we did before. And you know what? That job may not even exist anymore. I mean, the world
right.
has changed so much in the workplace that a lot of those specific jobs just aren't there. Or the other thing, and I'm sure you find this as well with your clients, is that people say, you know, we're special now because not only, you know, we don't just do this job. We can't be fit into a tight category that an employer, if they post a job or you hear about a job opening, it's a certain title or what have you. But we do, as we've grown more experienced, we do lots of different things. So we wear all kinds of hats, and it's really hard to get pigeonholed into a specific job that's being, you know, that someone's hiring for. So it makes it a little tricky in order to how do you define yourself and also allow yourself to be open-minded enough to go for that job, understanding that you can probably, once you get in there, make it work for you.
Now, you had an opportunity to go out and talk to tons and tons of people that are looking to make some kind of a move and transition. Were there any common themes that you found? I mean, obviously you were speaking to different people for different
yeah.
types of roles and different industries, but were there any common themes that you found?
Well, I found when I looked at, and if we talk specifically about this area of changing careers, changing from doing one thing, you know, from working in corporate America to working at a nonprofit, you know, these sort of the changes are working, say, a mortgage banker moving to teaching social studies, which is something he'd always want to do, or an investment banker opening a restaurant, an Italian restaurant. Some of these big career changes, the common themes that I saw, and believe me, people do this, and it is challenging, and I will say that money is the biggest stumbling block, which we can talk about. But in terms of what they did in order, and the ones I profile in my What's Next book, these are career changers. I only profile the successful ones because I wanted people to see these are what they did right. And these are the steps that they did. Everyone universally took their time. I mean, it takes 3 years at least to really make a successful career change. So you need to start working on what you want to do at 60, maybe at 55, or that sort of thing. You have to build the steps slowly. It doesn't happen overnight. They planned for it. They planned, they did their research. They found out, is there a need for someone to do this kind of job I want to do? They moonlighted. They all volunteered or went out and they did the job first. Because if you don't do the job first, it may sound like this romantic dream that you've always wanted to be a chocolatier. But my gosh, when you're making chocolate all the time, it really isn't that romantic, you know? So, they went out and they did the job, and they networked with people who did these jobs. They found out what's it really like. So it's networking. It's planning ahead. It's adding the necessary skills. They all took the time if they needed to take some courses in something, to add a certificate in order to have that professional sort of cachet or expertise to move into a chosen field. You know, they added that education ahead of time, and it didn't mean that they necessarily needed to go get a master's degree or what have you. It might be simply, you know, having a certificate program from a community college, which there are wonderful programs out there, but you need to find out if that is, in fact, you know, a really good program and who gets work from it and do your due diligence there. But, of course, they were able to do those things. And then some of the biggest pieces, as I started to say, is, and they all work harder than they ever did. But the truth of the matter is they all admit that I've never worked so hard. But you know what? They love what they do now, so it doesn't seem to matter, you know? So it's not like you're stepping off the merry-go-round. Maybe you're revving it up a little bit in the second career. But I find that those were sort of the basic steps. But the final piece is they were able to get financially fit, because money is the biggest stumbling block to really changing a career. Because if you're starting over in a new field, chances are your salary is going to be less than what you were at before. Right. And if you're starting a new business, which is starting your own business, which is really what so many boomers I've met want to do, and even it's you know, we've worked for the man, and now is the time to do our own thing. But if you're starting your own business, and you know this, it's really a good chance that you're not going to be able to pay yourself for a period of time. You might not draw a salary for 6 months, 8 months, even a year. So you really need to have money saved. You have to have money socked away as a cushion. And if you have a partner who is still in the workforce and that sort of thing that can provide that ballast during that period, fantastic. But do know that you need to really plan for that financially so that you can be nimble. And I tell everyone, you know, I have this sort of fitness program, but the one leg of it is this financial fitness. And you have to pay down your debt, get rid of that high interest credit card debt. If you can, refinance your mortgage. The fellow who went from mortgage banking to becoming a social studies teacher, oh my gosh, huge pay cut. But you know what he was able to do is he and his wife sat down and said, okay, we can sell the house. They sold their house. They moved to a condo. They don't have a mortgage anymore. And so they were able to get nimble, to get financially fit, to kind of remove some of these monthly burdens that make it difficult to have choice. And that's what being financially fit gives you. It gives you choice in your careers.
So obviously finance is one of the challenges. And
yeah.
There are several, I would assume, when you're trying to find a job and you're over 50. Let's kind of break those down and talk about some of those.
Well, I think, you know, the three, and I'll just sort of elaborate for a little bit then for a second if you'll indulge me in this fitness program I talk about is, you know, so I say you need to have, you know, Carrie's fitness program, which is, yes, you need to be financially fit, and really I'm serious about that. You do a budget, you figure out what's it going to take, what can you work for, what is doable, because often, you know, when you're switching around, you're going to earn a little less, so you need to give yourself the chance to try new things. And employers are always going to be, turned off for an older worker, and I use that word loosely, a more experienced worker. They don't want to pay your salary. So, you know, they think you're going to want too much. So if you can have some flexibility there, this will be helpful to you to be in good financial shape. You also need to be physically fit because here's what happens. Employers look at an older worker, and no one wants to talk about ageism, but it's huge in the workforce, and I know you've probably seen this with your clients. It's a big deal, and it's this hidden thing. But, you know, if you can, and people always say to me, you know, should I dye my hair? Should I get Botox? What should I do? And it's like, no. What you want to do that, fine. But what you really need to do, you know, you should get the new specs or whatever and dress appropriately. But what you really need to do is get physically fit. And I don't mean running a fast mile or bench pressing a huge amount. But if you are fit and you have a good fitness program where you're walking a couple of times a week or you're swimming or you're doing something, I'll tell you what, it gives you this vibrancy, this energy, this vitality that says, hey, I do have the stamina to do this job. I am up for the job. And that sort of, it also gives you a positive vibe. I think when you're fit, you feel good about yourself and you just have this confidence, and it comes through in job interviews. Employers pick up on your optimism and your positivity. And it all comes down to physical fitness and eating. Part of that is eating healthy, nutrition, leafy vegetables, drinking lots of water, all those things they tell us. But I'm serious, it's part of a job search. It really is part of your job search, is taking care of you, because people do judge a book by its cover. And
absolutely.
As superficial as it sounds, it's the truth. So, you know, and my third piece is you need to be spiritually fit. And I don't mean woo-woo, religion, all that. If that's good for you, it's good for you. But what you need is some sort of practice that gives you a quiet space you can go to, whether it's a meditation practice, whether it's yoga, tai chi. You know, for me, it's really just walking my dog. But, you know, whatever, where you can go that you can kind of decompress and step away, because looking for a job and this whole job seeking period when you're over 50 is incredibly stressful. And if you're changing careers, more so. If you're starting a new business, even more so. So it's a lot of stuff coming at you at the same time. So I really encourage people to give themselves a little, cut themselves some slack and have a place where you can kind of step away, because if you're starting over in a new career or as a, you know, working for a new employer, you're the new kid on the block. Sometimes you grieve your old job. You have the greenhorn blues kind of thing because you're no longer the superstar expert. So I think you need this sort of spiritual fitness as well. So those are just kind of three things, and it's easier said than done. But if people could do, you know, I always say just do one thing each day in these areas, and you'll gradually build those muscles, and you'll find yourself in a pretty good position to market yourself.
Employers, we wonder when we're out there and we're looking, well, what is it that they are going to be concerned about with us as a candidate? And being a candidate who is over 50, there are different types of perceptions or concerns that an employer might have that candidate might need to combat. So what should that candidate be concerned with when they're walking in for an interview?
Yeah. Well, these are the key things. The things that an employer that sort of sets off red flags, or they have these preconceived ideas, is they're worried that, one, as I just mentioned, that you're not your health. They're worried about health, that you're not going
right.
to be up for the job. You're not going to have the stamina, that you're going to have health issues. You'll be out, you know, you'll miss work days, or you'll be expensive to insure. And that's kind of changing, we know. But those are, health is big. So that's why the fitness piece may be very helpful to you. The other concern, which is major as well, is that you are not up to speed on technology. And This is key. You know, this is key in today's world. You need to ramp it up. It is non-negotiable. You absolutely have to be well-versed. You don't have to be a superstar with, you know, knowing every latest app or this and that. But if the job you're going after requires certain kinds of certification for, you know, software, you know, being able to use certain kinds of things, then by all means, go out and get that certification. You know, sign up at a community college, do a workshop in something. You need to show that you are comfortable with technology. And if you aren't, you know, again, go take some courses at a community college. You know, I often still ask my niece and nephew for help, you know, because there are things that we're just going to be a little slower at. But it doesn't mean we can't do it and you can't be afraid of it. And technology, there's some ways you can show that to an employer that you're comfortable. And I know that there are other people that have, you know, a deep expertise in this that Michelle, you've talked to. But this idea of social media, you have to have a LinkedIn profile.
That was my next question.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, that is today's resume. I mean, paper resumes, yes, they're important, but they are slightly passe. And having a LinkedIn profile, every employer wants to do their due diligence on you. Even if they didn't find you through your LinkedIn profile, which we are now finding, you know, some surveys that the Society for Human Resources recently did show that, you know, huge percentage of employers now look, or recruiters now look for new candidates via LinkedIn. I mean, that's where they're doing some of their searches. So you need to have a ship-shaped LinkedIn profile. And LinkedIn doesn't make it hard. They really have a nice tutorial to help you learn how to do that. There's simple things. I love it because I can put videos up there that kind of show me speaking or doing something. There are all kinds of ways to highlight and showcase yourself that a paper resume doesn't let you do. And your volunteer experience you can play up, and employers actually love seeing that. You know, they really like seeing the stuff. And you can position that, your volunteer work, in business terms. You know, you were a fundraiser, a project manager, whatever it may be. So LinkedIn gives you this great opportunity to tell your story, which is what your resume really needs to do. People want a narrative. They want to know how you increase sales at a company, or how you brought a project in on time, or why you're special. And LinkedIn and the technology there offers that to you. I also think having a nice Facebook thing or Twitter is super helpful, and it also helps you when you're going to interview. Again, if you're interviewing, if you're comfortable with technology, you're out there doing your Google searches on these companies. You know who they are. You know about the person who's interviewing you, hopefully. You can have Google alerts on the company so that you learn. So all of this really builds your arsenal to make you a fantastic interviewee and also candidate for a job. If you can demonstrate, if they see you have a LinkedIn profile, that you've, you know, maybe you have a Twitter account or whatever, they have a sense that, hey, this person's not so afraid of this scary world of technology, that they're comfortable with it. So those are simple steps, but you can be as sophisticated with them as you want. But dipping your toe in is not hard.
And even though we do have several speakers in the summit that are talking specifically about LinkedIn, LinkedIn's definitely one of my favorite topics, but I do want to just hit a couple of those highlights, particularly for this population, because I do also, I work with a lot of clients that really are very, very resistant to putting up a LinkedIn profile, and I constantly explaining LinkedIn is really, it is the number one tool right now that recruiters use to find their talent. So if you're not there, it's as if you don't exist. And when I get pushback, particularly from my 50-plus clients that say, well, you know, I don't want people knowing what's going on, or I have to, you know, I don't want to put my picture up, which is also extremely important to have a picture up on LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you respond to them? And I'd love to hear some tips that I can use with my clients.
I essentially tell them it's just non-negotiable. If you want to be part of today's job market, you've got to step up. But again, and the picture thing is huge. I'm glad you mentioned that, because please put a picture up, and not a you know, one that's all fuzzy, and not one from 10 years ago.
And not one with a couple of the grandkids in it.
Yes, because really, people do want to see what you look like, and I understand the reasons why you don't want to. You think you might be discriminated against because your picture's up there. You feel like it's intrusion of your privacy, that people are now you're in the viral space that you're vulnerable in some way. And yeah, you know, but this is how things, you have to be willing to change and take a little bit of a risk here because it's critical. And I know even myself, if I see somebody who wants to link in with me, and if I don't see their photograph, it gives me an instant impression of them that they're not really serious about it. You know, they're not serious about who they are and identifying that. So LinkedIn is just, I mean, that's just something that I think is critical. The only thing is we should note that I firmly believe this, that even with all these, you know, wonderful electronic ways that employers check up on us and we check up on them, job boards are really, really hard when you're sending online resumes. It's incredibly frustrating. I think people you still get jobs. You get a job from someone you know or someone you know knows. I mean, that's who employers want. They still want someone who has been vetted by someone they know. It still comes down to the old-fashioned networking. So you can do all of these things around the edges to help your job search, but if you're not out there making one-on-one personal connections, that's going to really stop you. And again, circling back, Michelle, to the LinkedIn thing, this is where it can help you. Because you can be afraid of all those things about LinkedIn, but you can also find someone that you went to college with who works at a company that you're interviewing at, and you make that connection. That's how you might get hired. That's how you might get the interview, is making that LinkedIn connection like, hey, I see you work at, you know, I'm just making up a comment, say Procter & Gamble. I know you work there. Do you know anybody in this department where I'm interviewing?
Right. Absolutely. It definitely gives you the opportunity to reach out and see where there might be connections that you can leverage in your job search.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's always a marvel how, you know, you just can uncover people. And even if they're not willing or they're not in a position to step up and help you, go in and put in a good word for you at the employer that you might be interested in working at, they might be able to tell you a little bit about the company, what it's like working there. Maybe you don't even want to work there. But at least they can give you some insight, you know. And I think that this kind of networking is critical. And, again, I just want to step back just to review a couple. You know, we talked about the technology piece. There are two other things that employers will think about an older worker as a stopping point. They think that you're set in your ways, that you're not willing to change the way you do things or learn new things, and that your learning curve has somehow flattened out. What you need to do, and that could be true of a lot of people, to be honest with you. They think, you know, this is how I've always done it. This is how we do it. This is how it should be done. But if you can demonstrate to an employer that you are engaged in lifelong learning, that you are, you know, you've just added this certificate in this, or you've just taken a class in X, you know, you show that you're constantly out there. And with online courses, again, if your technology is a little sharper, you can show that you're engaged in learning and your brain is nimble, as well as your finances, as it was to the other point. But if you're sharp and you show that you're willing to continue learning, that subtly sends a message that you're not this set in your ways person and older worker. And the final thing that they look at, that they're concerned about, is that you won't play well with younger workers, or even report to a younger boss. And truthfully, this is hard. I mean, I've talked to folks who have sat in, you know, they go to interviews, and they're being interviewed by someone who's like their daughter's age. And it is a little daunting, right? And so how do you deal with that? It's not easy. You need to find a way to get comfortable with it and indicate that you've always had good working relationships with somebody younger. And again, on LinkedIn, a good idea, you can get references and endorsements from people on LinkedIn, which is so much easier than someone having to pick up the phone and call your references. But if they can somehow identify someone who's younger than you, who you've worked with, who's written this glowing review of you or endorsement, it kind of helps. I don't know. What do you think about that? I think it does.
I agree. I think that's a great point. And I think that as we get older, we also have to keep in mind that, you know, that the people that are the top of the fields in certain spaces may be younger than us, and just kind of come to grips with it. I mean, just from a personal experience, I'll never forget when I, when I had my first child, and I brought him to the new pediatrician. And I looked at this pediatrician, and I said, how can he possibly know what he's talking about? He's so much younger than me.
So, you know, this is challenging, and I think everyone's going to come to how to do that. You know, we talk a lot about, you know, I wouldn't hide the fact that, you know, if you think that someone younger than you, we talk about this idea of reverse mentoring, like actually seeking out people who are younger than us to teach us. And again, with that technology piece, that often is helpful. But there are other ways that you'll find in the workplace. Like one thing, you know, I have a column I wrote recently about the biggest mistakes older workers make in their job hunt. And someone mentioned to me this notion that, you know, you want to always call somebody and leave a message, like call them and say, hey, you know, I'm just wondering how the job search, you know, where I stand on this or whatever, to check in on where, if you're still in consideration, and nobody leaves voice messages anymore.
Right.
So you really, you know, you just date yourself that way in terms of, you know, it's emails or it's, you know, that sort of thing is a lot of the communication. So a younger worker or a younger boss or a hiring manager than you are, it may have a whole different way of communicating than we grew up with.
Right. Right. And then, of course, if you actually had I was thinking that I hope that we never get to the point where we're actually sitting across from an interviewer and we're texting to each other across the desk.
Oh gosh, I know. And again, there's that huge fear too. But and when we all talk about a lot of us who are in this space talk a lot about the importance of when you're sending emails and electronic messages of any kind when it comes to an employer situation is, you know, this. It's just so rife for having errors and typos and gaps that come across miscommunication. But the spelling errors can be really horrible, especially if you have spell check on anything. So you need to be extra careful before you hit that send button.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Or you could, as a safety net, I always put on my phone, you know, a little disclaimer, something to the effect of, you know, please excuse any errors. My smartphone is not so smart.
That's perfect. I mean, you just need to own up to the fact that there may be some errors come through. And, you know, again, with all of these things, we may think, I think older workers, when it comes to even when you're looking at resumes, and it can be even your LinkedIn resume, but a paper resume for sure, we think that people, and if can look at our resume and say, oh, well, it's very clear that you're this special, super, terrific hire, that they really need you. But a younger worker, a younger boss or hiring manager who looks at it might not get it. I mean, they might not see the relevance of what those jobs you held were or see the importance of an award you might have won. You really need to flesh it out and be able to succinctly tell a story about why you were successful in that position or at that particular job, because even though you think it's clear, it may not be.
So let's go into that a little bit. When you're putting together your resume and you're putting yourself together, going in for an interview, what are some of the most important things to consider?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Boomers in particular, we're terrible at bragging on ourselves. We're just not very good at it. The younger generation is much better about tooting their own horn. And so you need to sometimes people, you need to have a session sometimes with colleagues, close colleagues or family or friends or somebody to kind of throw back some words at you about what your talents are and what your best attributes are so that you can kind of use their language when you're in an interview. If you feel uncomfortable bragging about yourself, you say, well, people often say I'm this, or I'm a very good communicator, or I'm a, you know, you can transfer it off to someone else using that language. It can be helpful. I think that we're often very, we're nervous about going into an interview, even though we shouldn't be, and that we haven't had to do it in a long time. And so we try to, like, be cool and say that, well, it's not a problem. But if you don't practice, have somebody that you can do, you know, mock interviews with. If you can tape it, it's sure easy enough on iPhones or whatever to tape it. And so you get comfortable answering questions. And even though an interview is may go off in different directions, at least you can view your body language and look at things about how you're presenting yourself that you can tweak a little bit and you can be aware of when you're sitting there face-to-face. And there's lots of, in my book, I talk about just different body languages you can use that help exude, that shows confidence versus nervousness or what have you, just simple ways of even holding your hands. But the very basic thing, Michelle, is dress appropriately. You know, even if they say it's a casual office, don't dress casually. I mean, I always say overdress, you know, and find out, you know, dress in a manner that's current, it's up to date, you know, have your shoes shined, have your nails done. Men don't need to have to wear polish, of course, but you know, look neat, look tidy, have a current haircut, all that, like back to the judging a book by its cover. So when you feel good, whatever you're wearing, be comfortable in, so you can make that sort of step forward. You need to have your couple of three major talking points about yourself that you want to be sure that you cover. And you need to approach it as if you, you know, have a little chutzpah, you know, approach it as if you're being brought in as a consultant to this company. They're not, you know, this interview isn't really about you. It's about how you can solve their problem. So what you need to do is focus on how, what you can do today to solve that company's need or their potential need. So that it's looking at it like an expert consultant versus somebody who's, you know, in some form of desperation looking for a job. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And I think on the presentation end, sometimes I coach my older clients, I think that one of the advantages that they have going for them is that they are experienced and they can walk in looking professional. And I really do caution that if you're 55, you don't want to walk in dressed like you're 25.
Beautiful. Exactly. Yeah.
You know, because there is a professionalism that comes along with having that experience, and you should be playing that up and not trying to look like you're just out of school.
Yeah, and the interview is really, really critical. I mean, you look someone in the eye, you respect them, you show up on time, you're not late for the interview, you've done your homework, you really show that you have taken the time and take this interview seriously, because it really is, you have to have respect for that person's time as much as they do of your time. And I think if you show that you've done your homework subtly, there's ways to work that into the conversation. It's very clear that you, you know, that you're bright and you've seen how you can match up with what they need. Those are so important. And, you know, I like to try to make a personal connection. If you ever can, when you go into someone's office, look around and see, if someone, I have a Labrador Retriever. If I see they have a picture of a dog, I might strike up a conversation just quite, oh, I see you've got a lab. I do too. You know, it doesn't, just something simple. I mean, I find that's a nice icebreaker.
Right. Now, in your book, you do talk about an encore career versus a second career.
Yeah. Oh, I'm glad you brought that up, Michelle.
Yeah, let's differentiate.
Yeah, I do think there's a difference. I think an encore career can be a second career, and often it is. They can be interchangeable. But the specific term, as I view it, encore career, is something that kind of spins off of what the group out in San Francisco, encore.org, which I absolutely adore these folks, and Mark Friedman started that. It's a wonderful organization for starting a second career with social purpose and social meaning. And there's an author, Marcy Albaher, who has a wonderful book out right now called The Encore Career Handbook. And what I think this is an opportunity, and a lot of boomers I talk to have reached this point in their life where they want to keep working, they want to stay engaged, they really don't want to do what they have been doing, and they really feel this calling to make a difference in this world. They've looked around and said, okay, what is my legacy? How can I make a social impact that I'm going to feel good about and it's going to resonate in society at some level? And it doesn't have to be a huge thing, but you can redeploy those skills from your primary career and move off into this whole arena of nonprofits and doing work that gives back in a way that it's not about the money. The money, yes, we all want to make money, but the salary is not as important as the mission of the organization and what you can do to further it. So that's what I kind of see as an encore career, as one that really has social resonance. And not everyone is suited for that. So it's something you need to ask yourself some hard questions about.
Okay, great. So when a person wants to retrain, let's say, for an encore career, do they need to go back to school, or what are some of the other ways that they can get into that?
Well, I think you often do need to maybe add a little bit to your skill set, and I think we should maybe all be constantly doing that anyway. But
right. But
check around, and there may be some things you need to get in order to do that. For example, one career that's sort of in this riding the age wave thing is the idea of being a patient advocate. Now, if you want to be a patient advocate, it's a wonderful thing where you can help, even start up your own business. You don't have to work for an insurance company or a hospital, although they now hire these folks. But I'm thinking more in terms of starting your own business as a patient advocate. That can be a job where you, there's no formal certification on that now, but there are programs offered around the country and online that can help you, figure out if this is a good career for you and add some skills for that. Or a senior fitness trainer is another wonderful job that, people in their 50s and 60s who are doing jobs for people, catering, bringing services to people in their 70s and their 80s. And so a senior fitness instructor is a really growing area. And again, you would need to, be someone who obviously is interested in this area of fitness, but you want to go back and get some certifications in that if you're going to teach classes at a gym or fitness center. They often require these, as well as you can get, in senior aerobics or aqua, silver sneakers, all kinds of different ways. There are all kinds of certifications out there to get to be a senior fitness trainer. They're not expensive to get. They take a little time. But why wouldn't you want to have those? So I think that's on that level. If you think, though, Michelle, that you want to start a career, you've got time. You're 50. Well, say you're 50, 55 even. You could have another second career for easily 15 years. And in that case, the possibilities really change. It opens up like, hey, maybe you do want to go back and get a degree in something. It is possible that you want to get more than just a certificate in an arena. Maybe you do want to go back and get that program, but you have the time and it might be worth spending the money. But again, there's some wonderful programs catered to the 50-plus student at community colleges that make it affordable to go back and get some of these degrees, and it's worth doing some research on.
Great. So I think one of the important things also to touch on is when a person either they're at a stage in their career where they have been laid off or let go, or they have retired and now they're a little lost. I think in all of those scenarios, often people are dealing with some form of loss of identity.
How
do they deal with that, and particularly if it is in the back of their mind that they do want to start something new?
Yeah, I think you hit on something very, very personal, and to each person it's hard to exactly say how that happens. But you do lose your sense of identity on many levels. Your job, so many of us, our jobs do identify who, they tell the world who we are. So, you need to really pause and take your time and think about what is it, that you would like to be. What is it that matters to you? And sometimes the skills and the talents that we have, we don't even recognize ourselves because they're so, as my grandmother would say, so engendered in us that we don't even notice that we're terrific at something. So often it's seeking out a career coach or seeking out friends or colleagues or family to kind of sit down and help you map out and get a sense of, ask them, what do you think I'm good at? And it sounds silly, but frankly, you'll hear things that you say, I am talented at that. I do that on a volunteer basis anyway. I hadn't thought that would be something that could be a job for me. So I think
right. There's
ways to explore and even finding your passions. That people say, oh, well, everyone says I should do what I'm passionate about, but I don't know what that is. Well, you know, you have to think back. Like, what are the things that made you happiest in your life when you were a kid? Usually some of those things come true. Now, often the things you're most passionate about, you're not going to find a job in. I'm passionate about horses, and I honestly don't see myself ever working in the horse industry because I wouldn't be very good at it because it's my hobby and it's something I love. But think about those things, and I think there's lots of ways to redirect your identity. But it takes time, and don't be so hard on yourself. You know, it's just it's a process that we go through. And frankly, you might try out a couple of different things in this period of time as you reposition into your next stage of working before you land on what is the thing. Or you might do something for 5 or 6 years and shift and do something else. I mean, I don't think it's a one-shot deal at this point. It's not like when we're younger and we start off on a career path and it's linear. It really is more of a patchwork quilt, I think.
There's so many different types of work arrangements out there. What should people expect when they go out and they start looking for to
I know.
Make a transition?
I think, you know, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, Michelle, too, but I often tell people don't shy away from this idea of being a consultant or a temporary worker, because it sounds like, oh, I'm not a temporary worker, but it often is a great way to jump into a new work arrangement is if you can, you know, kind of helicopter in. And small businesses are big on this. If you're, you know, a financial person, if you've got a CPA or are good with numbers and that sort of thing, if they can hire you to come in for 1 or 2 weeks a month or helicopter in to deal with specific times and you have an ongoing gig that way, you know, it can be a win for both people because you're keeping your resume alive, you're doing something you're very good at, and it could grow into a full-time job. But at the very least, you're working in a flexible work arrangement that suits you. I think there's a lot of so I think temporary work, consulting work, working from home, there are wonderful ways you can build out working from home and lots of different ways to start your own business that doesn't have to be it can actually bring in money. It doesn't have to be that hard to get up to speed. I'm thinking again about jobs that, you know, if you're good with construction or that sort of thing, becoming a home modification pro, again, that's an aging wave job. But there are all kinds of jobs you can be a consultant from your own home. So, and job sharing is another possibility. I mean, employers, I don't think, are that keen on it, but there might be ways you can negotiate to even, I love the idea of maybe somebody who's younger, like say a mom who wants to stay at home more with her kids but doesn't want to give up the job completely, pairing up with an older, more experienced worker to share a job. You know, you never know. They might go for it. So I think there are all kinds. I think we're limited by our own imaginations, but employers also need to be kind of brought up to speed on what some of the possibilities are too.
Absolutely, and there's certainly opportunity, you know, for what I would call professional temporary positions where you're filling in, you know, a workforce gap. So, for example, I just know, and I remember doing this at a different stage in life, but I was in human resource management, and human resources at the time, and probably still is, but very, very heavily, you know, female-oriented. And a lot of women going out on maternity leave and needing somebody that can come in and, you know, run the ship for a couple of months.
I think that's absolutely. Look for those. And there are a lot of temporary groups out there now who actually offer that expertise. There, I know in the Washington, D.C. area, there was one called Flexforce Professionals. And it was really aimed at retirees who want to stay in the workplace, 50-plus workers, and also women who had been stay-at-home moms and are now getting back into the workforce as well, to find jobs that really are professional things, from HR jobs to accounting jobs, project management jobs, those kinds of things that you may be hired for 3 months, 6 months. Again, it could be just this, you know, on a regular monthly basis, but I think you need to, there are an increasing number of these agencies out there that are finding those sort of the creme de la creme sort of temporary jobs.
Absolutely. And then, of course, it's something that could turn permanent.
It can, because you kind of, they see your value, you see, you know, you kind of dance around and see if it's a good fit. And you might just find that if, as the economy improves or what have you, that there is an opportunity for you on a full-time basis there. And at the very least, you've found yourself a nice a nice addition to your resume, and also, you know, network. You never know who you're going to meet, so you might find out about a job that somebody else has down the road. So it's, again, it's getting out of your house, and this whole thing, I think, when you mentioned earlier about the loss of identity, that you're sending out resumes online, it's depressing, you get stuck, in a moment, so to speak. You need to push yourself out of the house, take on some temporary assignments if you can, take on a volunteer assignment, whatever it may be that gets you, volunteering at a nonprofit can very well use your own skills. It's not stuffing envelopes, it can be doing some real work that applies to your skills, and again, you're networking, you're meeting people, and the job, you know, you just get increase your chances of finding a job that's really going to fit for you.
Absolutely. So what do you say when somebody comes to you and they're looking for advice on getting, you know, looking for a second career or looking to transition, and they say, well, I'm too old to try something new or to go back to school or to compete with the younger people? How do you deal with those people?
You know, I think that this is really, we don't want to say that we feel that way, but underneath, I think a lot of workers that I've met who are, you know, more the, not so much the 50 set, but someone who's 60 and is just a little bit tired of this whole game and knows they need to keep working. I mean, they may very well need to really seriously keep working for the money. And this is not a game. I mean, this is, and they're just what, you know, they're coming up against this roadblock again and again. And, you know, it's really just a matter of believing in yourself and so many levels and it being patient. It takes time and it comes down to this networking. It's really reaching out and pushing yourself to go to that one event you don't feel like going to picking up that phone every day and making that one phone call that you don't want to make, to reconnect with somebody. Or it's a process, and I'm not sugarcoating it. It is not easy to find a job when you're in over 50. It really isn't. But it is doable, and it just takes extra persistence. So if you're feeling that sort of resignation, you're not in a good place. So I really advise, you know, finding a career coach you can work with, finding somebody who can kind of reignite you and get you excited about who you are and what it is you can bring to the table in a work environment. So, because if you go off and interview for a job that you really don't feel inspired by, you know what, you're probably not going to get the job. And so you have to really try and want something. So I think there's lots of ways of self-discovery that can get you to that point and help you match your skills. And it comes down to, you know, going, you know, joining industry groups if you want to, you know, to the industry you want to be, to going to these alumni networking events that you go, ugh, not another one. Joining, for me, there's a women's group in the Washington, D.C. area. It's actually around the country, the Transition Network, which is based out of New York, but it's for women over 50. They have all kinds of fun cultural events as well as educational ones, but you never, you know, sometimes I'm like, oh, I'm not really sure. I've met some really interesting women at these things that have led me to someone I want to meet, someone I want to interview. So I think you need to constantly be expanding your network and working it, because that's how you're going to find work and a job you want is through someone you know tells you about it.
All incredibly useful advice. Carrie, tell us a little bit about you and some of what's happening in your world and the projects that you're working on and where people can find you.
Well, thanks. The best way to find me is you can go to my website, which is kerryhannon.com, which is kerryhannon.com. I am also, you can search for me, you can find me on AARP. I'm their jobs expert, and I write their great jobs column.
Hi, everybody. I think we might have gotten cut off a little bit there, so I just want to reiterate, if you want to follow Carrie on Twitter, her Twitter handle is at Carrie Hannon, that's KerryHannon. Twitter is at Carrie Hannon. And you can also visit her website, which is kerryhannon.com, again, kerryhannon.com. And again, we want to thank Carrie so much for joining us and talking about great jobs for everyone 50 plus. stay tuned for more great information and interviews at the National Career Summit. Thanks so much.